Bloomberg on the Economy with Michael McKee and Sarah Eisen. If you're listening via our new Bloomberg Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know you can also hear market updates on demand? Simply tap on Bloomberg Market Minutes. The reports are updated every half hour. If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Well, we're going to start, though. David Garrity is our guest. He's nice enough to come into the studio instead of phoning in his interview. But from what I understand, probably would have worked just fine if you phoned in on the new Apple iPhone 4S. The reviews are coming in really, really terrific. I mean, better than you normally see for a new technology, not a new technology project, but even for an upgrade, given how disappointed everybody was the day they announced the iPhone 4S.
Certainly. And to the extent that we're looking here at a very large installed base of Apple iPhone product already, it's certainly important for Apple as a company to ensure that there is a sufficient attraction around the new product coming out. And there probably are really two features, first and foremost, that help the iPhone 4S stand out. And that's, one, the integration of voice recognition technology, which certainly is a very significant differentiator for the product versus other smartphones on the market, namely those coming out of Google's Android operating system. And from that standpoint, reviewers almost to an individual have come out being positively responsive to this, and to the extent that now that there's a phone that starts to have a heuristic element built into it that actually starts to learn you, what consumer doesn't necessarily want to have that? And to the extent that we start to see this technology be used across a broader range of Apple products, certainly very significant. The second element, not necessarily native to the iPhone 4S itself, but more to Apple's Internet Operating System, or iOS 5, is the ability to have Apple's proprietary iMessage service let people send data messages, text messages, pictures, videos over the internet rather than being charged as they will be or otherwise by their wireless service provider. So there's an element here that further works to lock in consumers relative to Apple because potentially they offer a lower cost of ownership.
So you're impressed. So we're over the disappointment of not getting the next iPhone, the iPhone 5.
I think also some of the disappointment had to do with the fact that, you know, someone other than Steve Jobs was doing the product introduction. So it didn't really matter in a way who it was or what it was that was actually being introduced. It was the fact that you had someone other than Jobs.
Okay, that leads me to a question that came up the day that Tim Cook did the product introduction and got panned. How does that affect Apple going forward? In other words, was it really important for him to make a good first impression and he didn't, and people are going to worry about that, or do they give him a mulligan?
I think they give him a mulligan because I think at the end of the day what investors are going to focus on is just, you know, how well do these new products actually sell? What is the acceptance in the marketplace? And to the extent that the 4S does do well, to the extent that these other elements with iMessage and iOS 5 serve to draw more consumers to Apple, I think that they'll certainly give Cook the mulligan that we suggested, and that as a result, you know, over time, Cook could obviously learn to be maybe a bit more polished in terms of his showmanship. But, you know, from that standpoint, we think, you know, as long as we see bottom line success in terms of the marketplace with product acceptance, people will give Cook a pass.
You know, we were just talking with Alec about earnings and valuations and where everything stands. What's Apple's valuation right now? Is it
currently priced? Yeah, if you look at the company, you know, priced at about 13, 14 times current year earnings, expectations for earnings growth going from this year to next year, 18% to 20%. And so we've got the company trading at a fairly substantial discount to its growth rate, you know, on a price to earnings growth basis, about 0.75, which, you know, any growth stock that's priced below one times growth tends to be an attractive name. Clearly, there are a lot of stocks that have been beaten down in this market that are on sale, but to the extent that investors are discouraged by the broader economy and the weakness, we think that people will gravitate towards Apple, and so we think that this is a good entry point.
Well, how do the competitors respond? A lot of them have had some form of voice recognition software, but if the Siri system that Apple's putting out this time is such a game changer, as we're reading in all of the reviews, are they able to catch up quickly? Is this going to give Apple a market share push?
I think that this does give Apple a market share push, at least going into the critical year-end holiday shopping season. You know, Google's Android operating system certainly comes out with more frequent iterations or updates than what we see coming out of Apple, which tends to be doing things on once a year basis. And so we think that, you know, perhaps Android comes out with some features that may serve to match by the time we get into the first half of 2012. But it clearly says that, you know, for the remainder of this year, we think that market leadership in this category and in these characteristics clearly remains in Apple's hands.
I know you've also been looking at Hewlett-Packard, and this has been in the news lately with the new leadership, and you've had some strong opinions about this one as well as you follow the tech sector closely. What's the view there?
Clearly, this is a management team and more importantly, a boardroom, if you will, that is fumbling to find their footing. Obviously, we've seen news coming out most recently that they have decided to substantially reconsider most, if not all, of the former CEO Leo Apotheker's initiatives, and certainly as it pertains to their market leading, their globally dominant PC franchise, that most likely they'll end up retaining that. How quickly it takes for Hewlett-Packard to do a full 180 and try to embrace again the WebOS software system that they acquired when they bought Palm and see that more widely adopted across Hewlett-Packard's product line, that remains to be seen. But certainly to the extent that Apple is, you know, enjoying the kind of strength that they are, if Hewlett-Packard wants to sustain the value or create value in the PC division, they have to do something along those lines. And I would argue that for the company to walk away from a business which is a very important part of their history as a company, but also part of their overall business mix, it's hopefully a decision-making process that they go through quickly and actually get, you know, probably initiatives back into the marketplace in front of investors before the end of the year.
Yeah, interesting to tie that story in with Apple.
Well, and Steve Jobs, obviously, the great anecdote about him calling up William Packard and asking for parts for his little radio when he was a teenager. But is the PC space still going to be worth it to them if we're all migrating to tablets and eventually we're going to have PCs on our cell phones or wristwatches or whatever?
Well, and given the fact that they still are, in unit terms, the largest vendor worldwide, I mean, this is something that does have some value to them. It is something that does give them an economy of scale. They can develop product and put them into the market at perhaps a lower price point than Apple. Apple's strategy, obviously, as we've seen historically, has always been have premium products. If Hewlett-Packard can execute properly, there's no reason that Hewlett-Packard couldn't innovate but do so at a lower price point than Apple. Again, I would say again that for Hewlett-Packard, you know, the PCs are a very important part of the overall company, and that for them to think about, you know, in a cavalier way to walk away from this, I think is strategic suicide.
For a company that is already on the ropes because of the other smartphones out there, how much longer are they going to be able to hang on? Can they turn this around?
The issue for Research in Motion, customer service issues, which are obviously quite significant, you know, those are short term, but the bigger fundamental issue for the company is a migration over to a new operating system software called QNX. They had acquired a company back in 2010. They've been in the process of taking this software and essentially deploying it across their entire product line. In the meanwhile, though, they've had an interim solution called BlackBerry 7, which, because it's an interim solution, obviously large customers, enterprise customers, businesses aren't necessarily going to step in and essentially buy this product from someone who has been a trusted vendor over time. So clearly what Research in Motion needs to do is to get across this product chasm, if you will, and actually get onto this new QNX platform, which isn't expected to happen until the first half of 2012. In the meanwhile, you know, Research in Motion certainly is going to be buffeted around by market concerns having to do with issues, whether it's the management structure of the co-CEOs, whether it's the fact of customer service outages, whether it's the fact that governments such as China or India or others, you know, wish to monitor what the data traffic is. And so from that standpoint, Research in Motion probably is a stock that's stuck in a volatile range somewhere between low 20s to probably low 30s over the next 6 to 12 months. And I would say, if, you know, for investors, the clouds really haven't parted as of yet to get a clear view as to whether they can, A, get the products out soon enough, and two, B, get acceptance for the QNX to actually see this company remain its competitive position.
If I could just ask, what does QNX do that the current system doesn't. Are we talking about the touchscreen technology that everybody else is using these days?
QNX would support that. QNX would also offer integration to other technology platforms, which would enhance the usefulness with respect to the Research in Motions product. To the extent that we haven't seen it yet deployed in the market, obviously a lot of what we're being told from the companies, certainly marketing in advance of introduction, obviously we have in technology seen important products come out within the last few days that have enough wow factor to them and that currently are available in the market. As a result, are consumers necessarily going to say, well, you know, I'm not going to make the switch to Apple right now. I'm going to wait to see what Research in Motion comes out with, you know, particularly if you can see some things from
Apple.
Are they,
for someone who doesn't know the software specifics like myself, it just seems like this company is trying to stay relevant when iPhone, you know, when Apple keeps putting out product after product that people love. And, you know, now they have the outages. This could be like the nail in their coffin.
Yeah, going back to some of the comments we made earlier about talking about the importance of scale in an industry like technology or others where you can take cost advantages and pass them through to the consumer. Obviously, Research in Motion is rapidly losing that against the likes of Apple. And to the extent that Apple as a company can start to expand not only in their core product areas around smartphones, where they're a direct challenger relative to Research in Motion and others, but to the extent that we can look at tablet PCs, where we can see Apple start to move down market in terms of product extensions. You know, again, it builds up the scale of the overall organization, makes it very difficult for someone like a Research in Motion to potentially come back.
What about this rumor that Apple is going to come out with a smaller version of the iPad?
Well, given the fact of what Amazon came out with the Kindle Fire 2 weeks ago at a lower price point, going down as low as $99, you know, Apple probably needs to or has the opportunity here to essentially, you know, meet Amazon head to head in terms of this product area and come out with a product that probably is priced in line but with better features and functionality than what you're necessarily going to be getting from Amazon. Amazon clearly, you know, understands that with tablet PCs, what you have is an important media consumption device. And it's also a media consumption device that when you put it in the hands of consumers, they're 20% more likely to go out and buy something if they're actually surfing the web off of a tablet PC than if they're doing it off another computing form factor, whether it's a desktop or whether it's a smartphone.
Because they have it with them?
Because they have it with them, because the format's larger, it's easier to actually look at the product, understand what's there. And also to the extent that, you know, when you have a tablet PC, you know, people may not necessarily be as on the go as they would be otherwise. So you're having you're engaging with the consumer at a point where they're perhaps somewhat more open to possibilities. They're sitting down, they're resting, their, you know, imagination is working, and so they're open to suggestion.
You know these companies so well, their stories, their backstories, their software, every little moving part of these tech companies. How do you deal as an investor with the fact that sometimes it's just about whether Slovakia is going to vote on the EFSF expansion? I mean, this must be wild.
Oh, no, it's true. I mean, there was actually an article in the Financial Times today, the short view column, which actually summed things up very well, which was to say that, you know, as an analyst, you can sit down and look at the fundamentals of a company within an industry. But at the end of the day, as you're going through and projecting the results for a company, you really are making a bet with respect to the overall macroeconomy. And obviously, what we see swaying the market more and more frequently these days are basically the veering between risk on and risk off.
Yeah, that's why we have our jobs. Right? Just kidding. No, but it must be frustrating.
It can be, but also to the extent that you have volatility where you've got, you know, greater percentages of up 1%, down 1% days, as long as you as an investor can have a sufficiently long time horizon, the opportunity exists here to come in and buy things at fairly favorable prices.
Well, we were talking with Alec Young of S&P just a short time ago about earnings season and expectations. As an analyst, are you as pessimistic? Have you turned pessimistic rapidly like most of the analysts have and start marking down all the forecasts immediately because, okay, the economy is going in the tank and so therefore companies can't earn? Or is it just that much harder to do at this point?
In some respects, I mean, call me somewhat optimistic because I tend to follow a sector, technology, that actually is in the business of creating new things. And in the process of creating new things is potentially in the business of creating demand for these new things. And so from that standpoint, were you to be looking at, say, you know, an industry that makes a product that's relatively unchanged over a certain period of time, say, you know, miners, for example. I mean, we haven't reinvented gold or copper, but to the extent that you're dealing with technology, which is something that's new, you have the opportunity to come out and focus consumers' attention, focus businesses' attention, whether it's improving things like productivity, whether it's improving people's ability to access new experiences they haven't had before. When we look at technology selling at the levels that that there is right now relative to the growth we can see for this, we think that if you're doing a good job looking at the fundamentals, you can pick stocks up at good prices. And so in that regard, we look at earnings season here as being something of an opportunity, and we think that over time, if investors are concerned about sort of the weakness in the broader economy, they'll gravitate towards areas of growth. And we see that in technology. Looking at the fundamentals, the financials for technology are certainly stronger than we've seen in years. The balance sheets are quite strong. And we've seen also a very important level of M&A in technology as well. So we think that there are a number of levers here, if you will, that can serve to support technology investments on a relative basis.
And we're going into the all-important retail sales season, shopping season toward the end of the year. That's key for technology. How are you feeling about demand this year?
I think the interesting thing was, you know, why was it that Apple decided to do the introduction for the iPhone 4S in early October as opposed to what they would have done historically, which was to have done the introduction at the end of June? I think in some respects, while it may have tracked some of the internal developments inside Apple in terms of their own product development capabilities, we think that from Apple's standpoint, there was an advantage for them to make sure they had a strong year end by putting this product out in front. And we think to that extent, you know, we do have some indications that are good going into the year-end holiday shopping season. And we think that smartphones as a product category still remain very much at the top of consumers' lists. We think that smartphones remain very much of an aspirational product. People like to be seen with this. In that regard, we think that on a relative basis, things should hold up well.
Who do you think does the best at Christmas time?
I hate to sound like I'm blowing one horn over and over again, but I think Apple certainly looks as if they're very well positioned in that regard. I would think it probably continues to be an Apple Christmas. I think probably Amazon, as a result of not just the shopping experience, but because of what they've got with the Kindle and what they may be doing with the Kindle Fire, given the fact that it's going to have a lower price point for the time being. And granted, it's not competitive relative to the iPad at a higher price point with different functionality, but we think that those two introductions, the iPhone 4S and the Kindle Fire, both basically put out two important products into the hands of consumers. And we think that given what we said earlier about the inclination of consumers with tablet PCs in hand to buy more is obviously something that argues well towards internet retail. Retail as a whole may not benefit people going into stores, but to the extent that you have retailers out there who have strong internet platforms, they could benefit from this on the margin.
An Apple Christmas.
Good. She's looking at me like, all right, I know what I want.
A research report today said Alcoa always misses and Apple always beats. It's just the rule of earnings. That seems to be the same case you're saying with retail sales over the holidays.
We hope.
So we're going to sit back and we're going to order Apple products on our tablet PC because we have it with us.
Didn't you just say something about gold and silver, though? I don't know. We're going to ask Louise Yamada coming up about gold and silver because, boy, that's a technical question.
Maybe there is a technical chart that shows me buying you gold and silver. Is that what you're looking for?
I don't know.
I was thinking with Sarah that, you know, there's a company, Harry Winston Diamond, HWD,
ticker
symbol, you know, could probably benefit from your...
Boy, I'm in trouble here.
I just want to give Mike ideas.
All right, well, we're going to have you back on, David Garrity, next time to talk about luxury retail. Forget this Apple Christmas stuff. We're moving up to Harry Winston.
Listen to Bloomberg on the Economy, weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio, channel 113. Copyright 2011.